Welcome to Queued Up with Ziz and Pam, where we have powerful conversations and talking about what it means to be educated in the 21st century. So you probably see this big smile because, Pam, I love the title of our discussion because it reminds me of me. You know, there's one of my unique features is a gap, you know, a gap tooth. So that's what we're talking about, what it means to, for the coming, what, in the next couple of weeks? To gap or not to gap?
Yes. And I think that is the question, literally. And then the question is, what gap year means going forward? And I think perhaps what's not as well known is this has been a growing phenomenon, this issue of gap year. I mean, even with, Malia Obama, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, on a typical year, they say about 60,000 students do a gap year.
Mm-hmm. Well, now schools, even the Ivy League, like Tufts and Princeton, et cetera, actually have put in gap years and offering people to be able to defer and do the gap year because they are so concerned with the burnout of students coming in, with the maturity level of students coming in, that they now have incorporated programs that allow for gap year, plus the explosion of gap year programs. There's a gap year association. So here we are in this situation. And I will tell you, on Facebook, I posted something about the gap year that was in the New York Times or something else about how this was an opportunity. And I said, so I have two daughters who are in undergrad. And I said, and they're at expensive colleges, and part what they're getting from that, I'm not sure the degree is going to be so helpful, is some of this other experiences that you get on campuses. And I'm still on the fence, of course, but it's not worth that much money for me. And so I just said, if they're online, all online, my girls will be taking a gap. And actually many colleges are recommending this too, because they want kids to get the maturity to develop a sense of self, et cetera. Go ahead.
So this is a personal subject to you. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, so how did the conversation go between you and your children?
Well, it was interesting. At first they're like, what? But then they embraced it. So it was actually a really fun conversation, because I said, okay, let's say college ended for you right now. All right. And I know from my research that skills-based work is the future. I know that my daughters are not only gonna have to know how to get a job, they're going to have to know how to create a job. You know, the average full-time job is only 2.8 years for these young people, and they'll be moving, they call it the barbell. I think we talked about this before. We'll be moving from big corporations into this network of bringing their expertise to a network. And so I thought, oh, this could be a great opportunity to have them develop specific skills and certifications in the areas they're interested in.
But what did they say? I think this is a really good opportunity for even how to tell parents how to have the conversation.
Yeah, I think we weren't so graceful. I think both
and I want you,
father,
yeah.
father and I were like, we're not paying for that.
You know? Yeah, and I want you to say that. I think parents need to hear it, because it's not so graceful, because all of a sudden your child's like, what? You're not paying for this?
Yes. Well, and I guess it also sends the message, and I've actually told my children this for a very long time, that I'm not paying for the piece of paper. There is more to this. And I think that's unfortunately what many people believe they're doing. They believe that that piece of paper is a golden ticket to lifelong earnings. And of course, we know that that has not proven to be the case. And in many cases, it's financially detrimental. So we introduced it to our daughters in a very ungraceful way, to be honest. And at first they're like, what? What? And then the more they thought about it, I thought, yeah, well, you're not going to be with your friends in the dorms and learning the experiences and interacting with professors and, you know, things like that. And I'm not so sure that I'm all in on the whole college thing versus the cost, because especially when all of it, I mean, for a state school, it's $80,000 when
right.
you take
right.
campus and have all the living expenses and do full time. So
let's go back to the conversation though. So was this a conversation that took place in a time frame, or was this over 3 days, 4 days? Like, how did it occur? And I'm only bringing this up because I have a feeling a lot of parents are like, man, how am I going to have this conversation with my children or my child? And so I want you to, if you had to do it over again, how would you start it and go from there?
Well, I think I would start with the value of what they get out of college. Maybe start the conversation just saying, you know, what is it about college that you think will benefit you?
Okay.
And, you know, the College for All Kool-Aid is something we all drank for so long until I went into a grad program at, you know, 4 years ago and then began researching what happened. So I would start with the question, what is it? And I think for my daughters, there was a lot of social components, a lot of discovery. For me as a businesswoman, the return on investment is so questionable. I mean, even my daughter that needed a speech pathology degree to practice the thing that she loves the most, and then has to go to grad school. And again, my kids did not, we didn't do a lot of ACT, SAT preps. They were average scorers. They were not 4.0s. They, you know, so they were not going to get into state schools. They were not going to get into, you know, a lot of things. So they ended up at the private schools. And, you know, the cost is, you know, astronomical. And, you know, if I had to, you know, we saved 529 plans, did all that kind of stuff. But I'm looking at all of this saying, based on what I know about this skills-based market, if they started now, wow, you know, where would they be in confidence in learning about, you know, the skill set they're interested in, developing certification programs that are not four-year degrees, and, you know, on and on.
And that's essentially what. So the gap year is a year, and like you said, so the former President Obama and Michelle Obama's daughter took a gap year. Mm-hmm. She got accepted into Harvard, and instead of accepting admission right away, she decided to take a gap year. So like you said, a lot of colleges are starting to do that. You can do it formally or informally. And I think in doing some research, you shared with me that I just went blank on her name. I think it's Abby Fallick, who is the CEO of Global Citizen Year. Mm-hmm. So she described it as your purpose year. And I love that. Mm-hmm. And I know you would.
But yes.
But it's sort of like what you're saying exactly is like we're entering into a completely different era. Mm-hmm. We don't know what jobs are going to look like. We know artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, but what we don't know is that child that just graduated from high school, do they actually know who they are as they are going forth and embarking upon an education that's costing upwards of $100,000 at the low end and $300,000 at the high end, somewhere in there?
Yes, exactly. And I think what my hope is for the future, and I think we're seeing it in a lot of these programs that are becoming personalized, you know, like Big Picture Learning or even Summit Learning, where kids will have a chance in high school to discover who they are, do internships, get out in the real world. So this whole issue of gap year is probably a generational thing because I don't see it going forward. I am very hopeful that as these new types of educational programs come into being, that recognize that you have to start with the individual and the individual's interests and the individual's motivations and the individual's relationships and broaden their horizons to figure this out. Because by us focusing so specifically on what we wanted them to do in a blue collar and white collar world, we completely miss the new collar world that's exploding and also the shift from degrees to skill-based education. The World Economic Forum just, you know, put this out about its whole world. We need these bite-sized skills that very quickly become outdated if you're not upskilling, as we spoke about before. So getting back to my daughters, you know, I start with the conversation that they're getting there, and I would add the cost Certainly, if it was something that all of a sudden we couldn't afford, it's a no-brainer. But really saying, what would you like to get certified in? Like for me, I'm having them take a program with Dr. I, where they will be certified in entrepreneurship and small business. They will be certified in business communication. They will be tied into different mentors who can allow them to hear about ways and pathways to pursue what they're interested in. But it starts with what they're interested in and where they want to go. But so it's kind of a make your own program, but I's just starting offering this. And I was like, yes, I think this is awesome.
It's so interesting how it always comes, it typically comes back full circle to who are you? What do you want to contribute? And sometimes I'll ask this question of students, what's the problem you want to solve for society?
Mm-hmm. Imagine.
And they're like, ooh. Because it's an empowering question. You know, it's basically saying it's possible for you to solve some of these problems. Of course, I preface and say, yeah, us adults, we've laid out some problems for you all.
Yes.
We need you to solve some of these problems.
Yes. Because we established frameworks that devalue them as humans. I mean, well-meaning, but as I've said before, I quote Alex Vesely, Viktor Frankl's grandson, well-meaning is the opposite of meaning. It's imposing on someone your vision of who and what they should be, which has had detrimental emotional impact on a generation. And we've done it since the 1920s, where we've said, you know, here's, or even before, since formalized schooling really intensified. And so...
Well, it's interesting when you said that, what popped into my mind is like parents are like, well, there's a great example, the Posh Planner that we just got. For all of you who are listening, I went away from just planning out on my iPhone to old school, writing it out. So I had to get a planner, and the Posh Planner. So Passion Planner. Thank you. The founder of the Passion Planner totally went against what her parents wanted her to do, which was to become a doctor or something in that field. And she realized how creative she was in high school. And, you know, she had that tug, you know, between what her parents wanted and what she wanted. And she went out and she started a business and is doing very well. She's contributing to society. So it's hard. It's hard for students. It's hard for children to break away from their parents. And it's also hard for parents to kind of say, let go. And that's what we've been talking about. And I personally believe, I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago, you know, these midlife crises that individuals are having, I mean, they're starting earlier because people are realizing, oh my God, I'm in a job that I really love, love to hate. And, yes. And that's unfortunate. I mean, those numbers are what, like 60, 70% of people 80. Are doing 80. Yeah.
Over 80. Yeah.
I had a feeling it was that. I was trying to lower it.
No, it's true. I mean, I think as parents, again, well-meaning, as institutions, school systems, where you standardize whatever. I mean, just by definition of trying to do that, the compliance, the conformity, how much that devalues the uniqueness of the individual, the ability of them to make mistakes and struggle and pursue what they want to do. It is inherently impossible in that struggle, in that structure, to actually do that. And yet it's something that we perceive will give us certainty in an uncertain world. I mean, it cracks me up when they keep saying, oh, you're going to make $1 million if you have a college degree. And I'm thinking, they don't even know what the jobs are. I mean, corporations are consolidating as fast as we can imagine, and away we go. I mean, 52% of the Fortune 500 in the year 2000 are gone. They're out of business.
Well, and imagine this. I mean, I just talked to a friend a couple of days ago who said the CEO got them all together. And, you know, this is a pretty... Fortune 500 company, got them all together and basically said, we're not going back into the office until August. And my friend's supposition was, they're like, oh, wow, our employees didn't miss a beat.
No,
I don't need to send them into the office. Yeah. Why am I paying rent? Why am I paying for Wi-Fi? Why am I paying for all of these things? Mm-hmm. And they could be at home. So the shift is on. The shift is on. I mean, everyone's going to be figuring out like what's next, not just students, but also corporations.
Well, and that changes the work. That changes the school as well. Exactly. It's a lot. Social structure of school or 9-to-5 jobs. And so what happens as they do this, and I think also really cool is the emergence of co-working spaces that companies were already doing. So it's not like people will necessarily have to work at home by themselves all the time. I mean, I think you're going to see new frameworks of flexibility and meeting spaces and things like that allow for more flexibility. And I think one of the main reasons that people are so frustrated in these structures, institutional structures that only focus on output, is that they're disempowered as people. I mean, it's why 70% of teachers are disengaged. They have zero power. It's why students are disengaged. They have zero power. It's like you just sit there and absorb content. That's your job. That is so against who we are as human beings. We can't even, Viktor Frankl used to always say that really education should be about teaching them how to listen to their conscience, be guided for it, and go out into the world and give something to the world, not look at what they're going to get from the world, but that forward motivation. And I think our whole structure of this institutional system we've created doesn't allow that to happen. So how do we as parents in this incredible pause that's been horrible in some ways and really enlightening in other ways, come out of this empowering our kids? And I think it's not ours to solve. I think that's the other thing with my daughters in the conversation is, sitting there talking about what they're getting and all of that. I mean, I have a role in that I'm an investor in them. And I tell them that. I'm like, I am an investor, but you are the one that has to make it happen. So I can point you to things. I can throw it out, but I'm not investing in things that you don't have skin in the game or that at a certain point are not beneficial. But I kind of follow their lead. So doesn't tell me like, hey, you have to be a coder, because I know cybersecurity is one of the few things that's a career that will go through your whole life. None of my kids are going to be cybersecurity analysts, even though they could go to a 6-week program and make $90,000 or a 12-week program or whatever it is, but it's not who they are. So I have to start with them and follow their lead and teach them to be adaptable and to try things and fail at them and start again as they go through it. And I'm looking at this as a huge opportunity. And the schools, colleges, in their defense, they were not set up to be job producers, except for generally the state college systems. Yeah. But the other ones, they were set up more to be these thinkers and discovery, only it's too expensive. They don't have the tenured professors to focus on undergrads like they did. I mean, most professors. So we have this clash.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and because I don't have the particular stat to back me up on this, but when you start to think about colleges in general and who went to college, it wasn't necessarily they were recruiting everyone. And all of a sudden now, for whatever reason, the pathway switched after what I graduated in the mid-80s from high school. It kind of switched, and I don't know why, because there were some individuals in my school, which was a pretty small high school, who were great at cabinetry, fixing a car, all those type things that we have a shortage in right now. And for whatever reason, the schools, the vocational aspect of schools, they took that away and put it into, a center that served one part of the county, another part of the county. But what's interesting about that is you have to test to get into those centers now. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense. It's very much like the NFL doing a Wonderlic test.
Oh, yes.
And it has nothing to do with football. You're like, what does this have to do with playing football?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
No, but it's also that river of thinking. Unfortunately, what we've done is we've decided that everybody has to think the same way. And Duncan Wardle says, innovation. Diversity is innovation. We don't allow the diversity of thought, of emotion, of ethnicities, of perspective, of whatever. We narrow, so everybody has to be trained to think the same way. And what? And we're seeing the ramifications in society of that for sure.
Yeah, that. I had so many thoughts that went through my head when you just said that, especially when you use the word diversity. So diversity of thought or innovation comes from having other people at the table talking about different things because they have different experiences. So someone might say something, you're like, wow, I never thought of it that way. And then it sparks another conversation, another dialogue, and you keep going. And what are we talking about? Collaboration.
Yes. Well, you know what's interesting? You asked where this all started. It actually started in 1983 with a Nation at Risk report that looked at America in the context of the world and suddenly said, oh my gosh, we're not keeping up.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
What's super sad is that we've only gotten ourselves worse with all the with all the corrections. But what happened at that point was, oh my gosh, and this is when corporations were dominant, and corporate dominance needed pedigree. You needed degrees in order to be able to go up the ladder. So we began developing a status that went with this, the white collar versus the lowly blue collar. And so then, but what really kicked into gear, because I think as we went, I mean, I graduated in the late 70s from high school, and you know, school didn't play a big role. We had jobs after school. We explored things. School was not the center. I didn't, you know, have a ton of homework. But as we moved into No Child Left Behind, and we began testing, and then as we went into the Common App, and then as student loans fueled the money that was going into colleges, and colleges raised the tuition as it went through the student into the college, suddenly it became this scarcity, this thing that everybody wanted to have. And then we added race to the top in the next administration, and pretty soon everything was defined by the tests. And once that happened, we did test scores, you know, college applications, you know, you had to have your sports, you have this, we had to fit ourselves into this college. Admissions, of course, many, many people, of course, don't, because there's too many like them. Everybody's using the same playbook. I think it's 47% have A's and A minuses, really, you know, and the test scores have doubled in, you know, because people are, and it favors people in higher socioeconomic categories because they can afford the tutoring, the test prep, the whatever, all the extracurriculars that go on the application. And so, quite frankly, what a disaster. And we have all been feeding this machine, right? We all feed the machine. And then at the end, they don't get the jobs. They're in debt. The world has changed. The economy wants skills, not pedigree, because that whole corporate structure has flattened out into project-based work. So here we are. And how do we help our kids? And I think this pause is, you know, for me, it was like, hey, okay, so together with my kids, based on their interest, you know, I have to learn. I have to learn about what they're interested in, what's out there that can support them. And this idea of a gap year, I know some people were saying, oh my gosh, they have to go somewhere. No, they don't. There's ways to create your own gap year. Yeah. There's an incredible program in Colorado that was, you know, active. I think I sent it to you that they can be active. They can learn a language. They get exposed to all these different things in this discovery that doesn't happen when it rightly should, which is in high school. But we require too much guidance in high school towards an economy that's no longer there, which is super, super sad.
So basically, everyone, we're saying, if you haven't thought about a gap year, you probably should. I do think rightfully so. You mentioned there's some colleges who have a formal program, but there are programs like AmeriCorps, and they cover the actual living expenses. So that's they term it as cost neutral. So that's another program that individuals can check into that it wouldn't necessarily cost them anything, but the experience is vast. And that's really what we're talking about here, is that is the part. Because there was one other thing that in reading about this, they said most of the students will actually graduate from college once they do a gap year.
Yeah, 90%, they say go back to school and graduate because they're more focused on what they want to do. I'm kind of some of that. I'm not sure because maybe they find a passion in something that doesn't require a college degree. And again, more and more jobs don't. 7 out of 10 don't right now. And that's what, and some of them are very, very well paying, or the ability to stair step. So I had some parents that were emailing responding to my Facebook post about this, saying, yes, but then next year, everybody's going to want to go. And I'm like, no, this has been building for so long. Yes. And as kids are discovering, and as 40% of undergrads are over the age of 25, you do not have to go to college right out of high school. We are no longer in that education, life, retirement. We are in lifelong learning, yes, upskilling, pivoting, and in many ways not investing in a four-year degree. And colleges are seeing this. They're shortening the degrees.
Yep.
FedEx is doing a micro bachelor's.
Exactly.
That is
exactly
shorter. Western Governors University, you can get a bachelor's in 30 months or whatever it is. It's based on your time because it's competency-based. But as we're going through this, colleges are also realizing that they need to transform and jointly work with businesses. But the idea of sending your kid to college to find themselves when there's no professor who's guiding them, when they have no life skills because they've only absorbed content for multiple years, and they really haven't had a chance to develop that sense of self that they need, that's a very expensive place to send your kid.
Exactly.
To do that. So these opportunities beforehand, and I think it's only going to grow and grow and grow. So,
Yeah. So there we have it, the gap year, something to explore. And as you've heard, there are definitely many, many more opportunities out there. Come a few weeks from now, we'll definitely know what actually is on the horizon as colleges choose which platform you're going to be in person at an actual college, or you're going to be online. So something for all the parents to think about, something for the students to think about. So what a great topic, Pam. Thank you so much.
All right. Fun as always.
You know what I love about it is the fact that you got firsthand experience at that. So thanks for sharing your experience with your own children, because it's,
yeah. Well, I've also mentor kids. And actually I've had a couple come recently saying, you know, their parents never before thought of a gap. They've actually been asking for it. One in particular.
The students were asking for it.
Yeah, oh, they want a break, but parents can't even think about it. So
why? Did they say why?
Well, I think a lot of it is they think they're doing well by their child, but if they don't get the degree, they're not going to be successful in life. And I think, you know, really talk to the kids who've graduated with debt or the degree who are, you know, working at Starbucks. I mean, if the degree works, if you can focus, if you can get something out of it in terms of, your connections, your ability to operate in the world, and a degree that is applicable in the job market. You know, as I said, my older daughter was speech pathology. She has to get an undergrad. She has to get a graduate degree in order to work in that field. That is important. For my other daughter, who is, you know, a storyteller and artist and whatever, yeah, that's not necessarily what she needs to do, although she is making it work and has gained, you know, some things with her own experience. And my other one is advertising marketing, which I say you don't need a degree. You need definitely credentials. You can learn everything. A lot of these can be self-taught.
Right.
This lifelong learning, it's out there on Coursera. It's out there on edX. It's out there on Udacity. You can learn a skill very inexpensively, get certified, and away you go.
Right. Well, the other part, I think the sad part, so the students that you're mentoring, the part that really resonated with me was their parents not listening to their child.
Yeah. Well, they are now. I mean, as I said, I think they're starting to shift from lack of choice, or seeing their older children that went into the system and didn't necessarily come out with the kind of empowerment that they would have hoped, or the kind of work and job that they had hoped that they would get, and often with debt. So I think that we're learning from this generation we just sent there that it's not really delivering on its promise.
Well, and the other part about a gap year, it allows you to sit back and kind of observe what's actually happening. So that's the other beauty of this. So you know,
changing fast, changing
It's ever changing. It's so fast. And hopefully, you know, schools will also make the adjustment as well. And that's really what we're talking about here is learning, taking the information, assimilating it, you know, and that's, to me, that's what learning is all about. So, you know, we're having these powerful conversations about what it means to be educated in the 21st century. Let's start really adopting it. So Pam, thank you. Wonderful conversation. Gap year. To gap or not to gap?
Depends on the child.
Yes, depends on the child. So if our audience members has any questions, if you totally disagree with this, we want to hear from you. So check us out at q-edup.com. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.